This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on The Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
And we are back. Thanks so much for being with us this weekend. This is going to get pretty wild. I'm not going to lie to you. Phoenix City Council 6 candidate debate right here live in studio. Incumbents Sal DiCicio and Carlene Keo Parks. Here's how we're going to do this. We're going to do this nice and civil-like. This will be a conversation. We'll ask each candidate alternating questions. And we would ask you not to filibuster. We don't want to turn this into a stump speech. And understand this is our job to ensure each of you have approximately the same amount of time. And at the end, we'll split the remaining time equally and let you make a final case for your candidacy. Dr. Mike O'Neill.
Okay, District 6. Let me explain what that is to you in case, and most people probably don't understand district numbers. This is what those of us in the sort of trade referred to as the barbell district. It includes most everything south of South Mountain. Then the district goes up State Route 143, the Hocom Expressway, into the Biltmore Arcadia area and covers parts of Central Phoenix. Demographically and sociologically, it's some, but not all of the more affluent parts of town. The vote on this election is August 27th. There's early voting that is already undertaking. There is no runoff because there are only these two candidates, and that probably explains why, at least to my reckoning, this race seems to be the most contentious of all the four city council races underway right now, perhaps because there are only two candidates. Now, I, as an observer, have had the opportunity to listen to at least one previous debate that was on television last week. For our listeners, here's what I learned. Both of these candidates are against taxes, in favor of jobs, they want more accountability in government, and they both love the police and fire departments. I want to take questions, invent questions, which takes us beyond what these are often sometimes talking points. And let me start out with the issue of taxes. Let me state the obvious, stipulating you're both against taxes in the abstract. But in the city of Phoenix, we have an additional factor, which is the recently enacted temporary food tax. A sales tax on food is about the most regressive tax there is. You both said you're working against, want to work against eliminating it. Sal, and by the way, but you've both consented to let us use first names, which sure. I appreciate because sure, you've got long last names or multiple names. So nice, easy to remember first names. I appreciate that. Sal, you have proposed eliminating the tax immediately. What exactly would you cut in the budget to compensate for the loss of revenue that would come immediately if you eliminate the sales tax on food?
Well, let's take a look. And I like that because the food tax has literally been the thing that I've been pushing. And I'm the one that struck the compromise to phase it out earlier than it was planned to do. But I do believe it can be eliminated completely. And here's where it is. I mean, if you look at the way the food tax was first implemented, it was sold to the public as we got to go out there and protect our police and fire. Well, that turned out to be completely false. $137 million was spent on pay raises and bonuses for government employees while the food tax was enacted, almost the exact amount that the food tax brought in. The place to do, if you're going to be looking at what you would call cuts or basically areas that you would want to see phased out, one, you've got to look at the employee pay raise part of it. That contributes at least $30 million a year. Then you've got other areas that you consider to be I would call non-strategic functions. The city of Phoenix spends about $6 million on public relations, lobbying, association dues, and then a third area, which also includes $3.7 million, deals with the city of Phoenix literally pays out unions to do union activity. It pays $3.7 million a year directly to unions to fund union activity. Once you put all those together, it literally starts to phase it out. The other part of it is you can literally at the same time start increasing your service levels. So if you look at the service levels that were brought in, that were cut because of the fiscal strain, those service levels could be completely brought back online. And I'll give you one last example, and then I'll give it to my opponent because I don't want to filibuster it. But the city of Phoenix, in this budget alone, the $29.9 million in pay raises, could have hired 350 more police officers and firefighters for our streets this year alone, rather than the 29.9 that was put in pay raises.
Carlene?
First of all, I am in favor of the city manager's proposal, and he says that he could decrease it by 1% by January 1st and not eliminate any of the necessary services to the city of Phoenix. So I'm in favor of that. I would like to respond to some of the things that my opponent has said. The $137 million is actually it's in a contract, and what he's talking about are the step increases that the city employees and the receive on an annual basis. If he were to do away with this, and this year was $29.9 million, he would be violating a contract and opening up the city to litigation. Second of all, the fallen firefighter Brad Harper. He made $16.30 an hour dying for us. And he was due for what's called this so-called pay raise scheme of Councilman DeCiccio's. And he would have received the maximum 5% increase, which was 81 cents. And that would have brought Brad Harper to $17.11 dying for us. And this is what Councilman DeCiccio wants to do away with. Thirdly, the union activity. I've explained this to my opponent several times, that the negotiation between the city manager, the city council, and the unions is by contract. And he was at the table for 11 years negotiating this, so he should know that it's a right-to-work state, and all of the city employees, fire and police, voluntarily, and not all of them belong to the union, but voluntarily give up a part of their paycheck to have the unions represent them.
Let me follow up on one thing I think you said, and I want to make sure we're clear on that. If we're going to eliminate this tax immediately, you need to have immediate cuts. I think I heard you'd say that you would roll back existing pay raises that have already been given.
Well, you can't roll back with what's existing. You can only move forward, Mike. So what you would end up doing is you would put the public first when it comes to these negotiations. And if you look at what occurred in these
But that's in the past. If you want to save the money now, we got to be
That's how you do it. You move forward on that. What you literally say is the public would have to be protected first, then everything else goes back to the employees. This $3.7 million that she was talking about is direct funding to the unions that the courts have already ruled is illegal, and she supports that.
Sal DeCiccio is here. Carlene Keough Parks is here as well. Phoenix City Council 6 election candidate debate right here. We'll be back with more. Don't go away, folks. It is Mike O'Neill, Mike Russell. This is The Think Tank, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We are here with the city council candidates for Phoenix District 6, and we've been talking about taxes, police, and fire, and we're going to pursue that discussion a little bit. I think I heard you're both for lower taxes, but I looked at the city budget, and public safety, meaning police and fire, is by far the biggest budget item in the entire city, and almost 90% of that money goes to pay people. Just one observation. Police and fire is a 365-day-a-year, 24-hour-a-day job. So if you want to put an extra cop at Central and Washington, and you want them 24/7, 365, with full support, meaning all the ancillary services that goes with that, you're talking about $1 million a year. So we're talking about, when we talk police and fire, we're talking the big stuff in the budget. So my question is, do you want to hire more police and fire, or do you want to keep taxes low? And how can you have it both ways?
That's a really good question. First of all, we have to protect our citizens. The basic services of basic mission of the city council is to provide quality services to its residents. And of course, police and fire are right at the top of the list. 97% of the police officers, when asked, do they have the necessary tools to do their job, said no. And to me, this is something we have to take care of right away. I, for example, when I was home alone one time, we were doing some construction, someone tried to come in the back door. So I called 911 and I grabbed my Glock, and the police were there within under 3 minutes, and I was very impressed. And we have to make sure that the police are there for us when we need them, and I'm sure you'll agree with me. Same thing with the fire. One of my girlfriends, who's also a constable, her home of hers was on sale, a rental, and there were three families in there, and the fire was there, she said, within 2 to 3 minutes, and there were 50 firemen on the job, and they put the fire out, and none of the other residents got hurt. No one was harmed. All of them lost, of course, everything, and none of the other homes were destroyed. So we have to put money towards the police and the fire. I think there are, I do believe that there probably is some fat in the budget, but what you may or may not know that the city manager had a task force in 2010 called the Innovation and Efficiency Task Force. And it was comprised of 14 department heads, so all the heads of the department, and 11 private citizens, of which each council person could pick one, and their job was to find the fat, and they found $79 million worth of fat, and they will continue to do this. So I think they are looking for economies of scale and where we could cut.
Apart from fat, which everybody's against, I want you to clarify to me, are you saying that you think that the staffing levels overall in police and fire are currently sufficient?
No. No, actually, depending on the statistics and where you're coming from, we're down at least 300 police officers to date.
Sal, you can pick up on that point.
Yeah, perfect. The Innovation Efficiency Task Force that Ms. Parks was talking about, I started that as when I was on the city council. That was something that the city manager and I sat down. We used the same model. The $79 million in government fat or government waste was part of the ideas that I brought forward. What you've got to do is you've got to look at specifics here. One, we are definitely short police officers. I don't know if it's down 300 that we need to be up. But we're definitely down that we need to be up. The if you have a budget that's 65% of your overall budget, if you don't create efficiencies, even in a department that most people don't want to talk about because it creates a lot of, you know, anxiety with a lot of people, and you can see that in my race because I want to create efficiencies in there. But if you don't talk about that and look for efficiencies in those departments, it's going to impact other social services that you have or even taxes. Here are some specific things that they should be doing and looking at. One of the things that we did is we came up with something called the Berkshire Report that said that there are 712 positions, about 550 police officer positions, we could be maximizing and increasing our efficiencies by putting more police officers in patrol if we were to follow certain specific things that came out of the report. One of them was dealing with the 4-10s versus the 5-8 hours of for employees.
You voted against that.
No, I voted
You voted against the budget that would have funded additional firefighters. You voted against the budget that would have actually gotten more funding for domestic violence. You did not really – I mean, I can't believe you're taking total credit for the Innovation and Efficiency Task Force. Well, it was the city manager who did this.
No, it was the city manager.
You had very little to do with this.
Oh, that's just not true.
Let me ask you to clarify.
Let him respond to that.
You said that you could increase efficiency. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that you can forego the need for the hiring of additional officers?
You could do both. It depends on how you want it as a public.
You're the policymaker.
No, I'm going to tell you where I would be on that. I believe that those officers could have been reassigned into other areas and maximize them. If you got some cold cases, you could reassign officers there. We had 712 positions, civilian and police officers, out of that report. If we did a reassignment and brought basically the hours down, instead of having people on 4-10s down to 5-8s like everyone else, we could have maximized and put that many more officers. The other thing is you've got to look at pension spiking. Pension spiking drains millions of dollars a year out of our budget. You've got to look at
Let me just
things.
Take a minute because you used a phrase. I just want to make sure everybody understands what that is. Pensions are, for public employees, are typically a function of how many years of service and what your salary is. And by pension spiking, and I think you'll both agree to what this is, in terms of the base of what your salary is, it's the ability to throw in unused sick leave, mm-hmm. unused vacation leave, and possibly some other things so that you get an artificially high base that is then computed for determining your retirement. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I want to make sure people understand.
Yes, but the mayor's already going to do away with this. He's already proposed to do away with spiking, so it's a moot point.
It's not a moot point. We haven't done it, and I've been pushing
it. The mayor has been pushing it also.
It's not. go back to the records, you'll see that it was my agenda.
Going forward, the mayor also has recommended that we do away with spiking. And also, I find it absolutely amazing that you're telling the police officers and the police department how to manage their department.
I'm not. I have an obligation to look at finding ways to create efficiencies, Carlene, which you do too. All of us do. It's either that or you end up cutting services. If you look at what happened in the last budget, that $277 million, we had to cut after-school programs, domestic violence programs, we had to cut homeless programs. We had to cut those, and there was also an increase in fees. If you don't look at efficiencies in all departments, and you can't say that some of these are untouchable, every department has efficiencies that need to be increased, and police and fire are also part of the city of Phoenix that have to have better efficiencies. And once we reach that, that's fine. But we have to be able to talk about it as well.
We've got a minute. I want to go real quick to both of you, and I'm sorry because this is a big question. Sal, you both indicated you're in favor of job creation. Give us two bullet points on what you think the city can most do to create jobs.
Well, Tom Simplett and I put together the best model in the country where it comes to streamlining. We now can get businesses a permit in one day where it takes 4 months or more in other places. But you have to go beyond that. That created the structure internally. You have to look at looking at business clusters like they did in Tucson and Houston, focus on maybe education or healthcare in the city of Phoenix. I'm also part of the trade with Mexico.
Carlene.
I would promote local businesses, actually, and I would talk to the local businesses and listen to them and find out exactly what it is that they need from us. I would also promote incubators. We have a great incubator on Washington Street called Cahoots. They've made over $3 million in the first 6 or 8 months, and I would also keep encouraging the mayor and the city council to go outside Arizona and to encourage people to either move here in their businesses or to expand in Phoenix, Arizona.
Coming up next, the Phoenix City Council District 6 candidate debate rolls on with Sal DeCiccio and Carlene Kehoe Parks. You are in the think tank on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the think tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We're here with the candidates for Phoenix City Council District 6. I'd ask you, this is our last segment. I have several more issues, and this has gone quickly. I'd ask you if you could both keep your answers just a little bit shorter, we could cover a little bit more ground. I have a parallel question, a somewhat different question for each of you. But Carlene, I want to ask you the question. Unions have been big supporters of your campaign. When the unions sit down with the city to govern, city to negotiate pay raises, the question one might ask is, how can you be impartial when you may owe your very position to their support?
Well, that's a good question, but I even my signs say I'm an independent person. I am a business owner, lifelong business owner. I've been on most of the major boards, charity boards here. I was the first female to chair the Boys and Girls Club and charter member of Fresh Start Women's Foundation. And also, a lot of people have contributed to my campaign, and they've worked on the campaign. And I'm very, very proud of it. So I am beholden to no one. And I think that to basically say that the unions are behind this and behind that and belittle the unions, as my opponent so often does, it basically says that it's not a good thing to have good representation and good relationships with the city employees. And I think it's an excellent thing to have good relationships, and not all the city employees, including fire and police, are in the unions. No, by the way, most of the firemen and the police officers are Republicans. And so I think it's a very good thing to have good relationships with them, because everybody knows if you have good relationships with the people you work with, everybody works together better for the city of Phoenix.
Sal, similar question. Your supporters have included developers. When one of your financial supporters comes to the city council and he wants some sort of variance or exception, how can you be impartial?
Well, you just got to be impartial. That's just part of it. I mean, if you look at it, the amount of money that I've collected from individuals is small compared to the amount of money she's received from the unions. I mean, the government unions have poured all this outside money. Now we're hearing it's federal unions coming in of up close to $700,000. There's a reason for that. If you look at the impact of unions, what does it mean? It means that this $137 million for pay raise scheme, a food tax for pay raise scheme, is enacted. Pension costs, long-term retirement costs at the city of Phoenix, In 2008, they were $203 million. Today, they're $282 million. Those costs are becoming problematic. You've got pension spiking that needs to be fixed. You've got $3.7 million being funneled into these unions with taxpayer dollars, direct dollars. And the only way to fix it is you've got to just get it done. So the fiscal reforms are why people are seeing the fiscal reforms I'm proposing are the reason why so much money is being poured into this race.
Well, you know, you've got almost $300,000 from developers alone, so I don't know what you've promised them at the table, but you've been at the city's table for 11 years, and you've been quite ineffective. And the fiscal reforms that you're touting, basically most of them, either the city manager or the finance departments have installed them.
Those fiscal reforms are what I've been pushing. No water rate increase, no sewer rate increase, no property tax.
You know, the property tax is ridiculous.
Hold on. Allow him to finish, please. Go ahead.
Those are just some of the fiscal reforms, but the major fiscal reforms deal with pension reform. That's the long-term debt. I fixed a lot of the stuff already at the City of Phoenix when it comes to those short-term expenses on the public. But the long-term debt is what caused Detroit to go under. And if you just read Time magazine just this last week, it talks about the influence of government unions, why the politicians will do nothing. She sits there. Her seat means millions of dollars to these government unions. So them pouring $700,000 into this race to oppose me is nothing. And they've been misleading. They've lied. They've come after my family. They've said nasty things about us. It's horrible what's occurring. When we go out to dinner at times, we have people that approach us. It's horrible. And I know why people don't do things. But I'm determined. I'm going to get this thing fixed. I'm going to get it fixed.
Let me ask you both one question. Since you've raised the issue of pensions, one thing has always occurred to me as part of the dilemma about public pensions. If you as a city council member vote to give city employees a raise, you have to pay for that. You've got to tax people to do it. If you vote to give city employees a bigger pension, they're happy with you, and somebody 20 years down the road has to pay for that. People in the private sector, by and large, don't have fixed pensions anymore. They have contributory pensions. And if you had a contributory pension like a 401k, you'd have to pay for that today. Carlene, is that a problem? That the pensions are unlike any other kind of expenditure. You can offer it, but you're long gone before anybody has to pay for that.
That's a big problem, and that's one we need to absolutely address. And actually, I think we must look at the pension plan, actually. And the citizens and the voters took a really good first step in voting the 201, and that was actually reducing the pension cost. It saved the city about $600 million over the next 23 years. But I also have to tell you that if this magical math and driving if you want to see Phoenix go down the tubes quickly, you could just adopt his 401k defined contribution method. Because if you looked at the statistics, basically it will cost the city 20% more, because just like you said, somebody on the back end in 20 years, they'll run out of money for them unless they put 20% more in for the 401ks. And it's about, I could tell you, it's $220 million. Also, Brad Harper and Daryl Raitz that just died, they would have had practically nothing, and nothing for their family or their kids, had they had his method.
That's just not true again. There's a couple fallacies here. One, I support pensions for police and fire, but I believe everybody else should go to a 401k. What she's saying is if government does what the private sector has been doing for over 25 years, it's a horrible thing and it's going to be bad for the government. It's just not true. It's fundamentally not true. If the private sector can do that, others can do it. But what you need to also do, you need to rein in the pension spiking. If someone's salary is $60,000 a year or $100,000, that's what it's based off of. Not all these other frills that get put in there. It's usually at the top level that get it anyways, those people at the top.
Let me understand. You'd keep the pensions the same for police and why? So there'd be two classes of public employees. Police and fire would get one kind of plan and everybody else would get a lesser plan?
There would be one public sector employee, but there would be individuals within there that would be getting different types of plans. That's correct. And they do that now. Different people get different plans out of there depending on where you're at. If you're a manager, you get one plan. If you're public safety, you get another anyways.
I want to let Carlene respond.
Yeah, his magical math that he always has on the back of some napkin just blows me away. I was a math major, and I've looked at the budget and I've looked at the pension stuff, and there's no way you can make this work. And I'm telling you that if you go to a 401k on new hires, so he probably should check his math, on new hires and leave the old hires where they are, you have to put 20% more into that budget, and it's $220 million over 20 years. So I don't know where he's getting his math from.
Okay, I want to do something different now. And I'll go first to you, Carlene, and then we'll go to Sal. This has been a contentious plan. You got a minute. Would you like to say something nice about your opponent?
Yes, actually, he voted in favor of the ethics reform, which I was on a part of Mayor Stanton's transition team and that I recommended he put in place. So that's the one thing I can say nice about him.
Sal?
I can say more. I know what happened this week was bad, but I'm going to tell you, I don't have any ill will on that, Carlene, but I've got to tell you from my end, I believe that internally you've got to be a good person. You are a nice person. And whatever happened in this campaign, all this bad stuff that's occurred, I don't believe it's directly related to you. I don't believe that. I can't believe that because it's been that bad.
I am going to speak up for the people and especially for the women and especially for the women. You brought it up, Sal. I'm going to speak up for the people and I'm going to speak up for the firefighters and the police and the city employees, especially the women. I will continue to do that.
Well, I'm trying to say something nice about you.
Forget it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. A 1 minute response to each of you. If elected, would you make an absolute pledge to finish your term? Or do you think that's a reasonable question to even ask?
You want me to go first?
Sure.
This is the only elected seat I'm going to – I have no intention of doing anything else except be on the city council. I ran Margaret Hance's – you may remember Margaret Hance years ago – and she was a great lady, and she said city politics is exactly where it's at because you can see things happen. You can actually make a difference. And I have absolutely no intention of doing anything else.
Sal?
Yes.
Okay. That's short and succinct. And shorter than I expected.
Oh,
wow.
I figured that
well,
would, take us.
God,
I figured that
more.
Would take us out of it, but
it got mildly awkward.
That was a definitive answer. Real quick, each of you, I think we got about 20 seconds each. What's the one thing you would do, Sal, to change city government?
Well, you've got to bring in fiscal accountability measures, and you've got to be. Otherwise, you're going to be heading toward the face of reform of Detroit. And job creation, the plan I put together works. It's been working. We're now the best in the country.
Okay, Carlene?
Absolutely make the more accountable and more transparency in the city council and more civility. I think you need to work together with your teammates, with your city council people, and with the city employees, which includes the union employees, the fire, the police, and all of the people that work at City Hall.
All right. Well, we want to thank both of you. Thank both of you for for getting into this race. I want to thank both of you for representing the city of Phoenix, for doing what you can to make this a better place to live. And this has been incumbent Sal DeCicio and his opponent, Carlene Keough Parks, for the Phoenix City Council District 6. It's going to be continue to be lively. And I think we welcome the debate, and we're glad that you could be here on the Think Tank and invite our listeners in and key us in, really. This was this was something I don't think a lot of people are paying attention to outside of District 6, but it has ramifications all the way across the state. So we want to thank you, as we do every week. We wrap it up. We put a bow on this entire show. Dr. Mike and I will be back. This is the Think Tank on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We don't back down. Dr. Mike O'Neill and I, we do not back down. MikeO'Neill.org for any blogs, articles, op-eds, videos, etc. You can email them there, too. You can find out what's going on. Were you on Fox News this week?
Yeah, I was.
I saw you on Fox News. I was like, hey, I know that guy. I work with him.
America's favorite bad boy, Anthony Weiner.
Anthony Weiner.
By the time I think they got me on, it was a kind of a foregone conclusion that he's toast.
Are you going to have that video on your website?
I haven't worked
you
out
need
that
to.
No, it was very unmemorable. They had me and a sex therapist. The sex therapist was a lot more interesting and actually had a lot more to say. My point was pretty simple. This country is willing to give people a second chance on stuff like that, but not a third.
Or fourth,
and,
or fifth.
Weiner, tenth. I think, is just over the top and gone. He's sticking it out, I think, because he's got nowhere to go.
All right, well, let's bring it back to what just went down here in studio, the Phoenix City Council District 6 candidate debate, Sal DeCicio and Carlene Keough Parks. A lot was covered. We started off with the food tax he talked about.
Taxes now, and spending, basically.
What came up was the food tax. Want to touch on that for a second? $137 million for pay raises from the food tax?
Yeah,
I don't want to pay more for pay raises.
Interesting point. I think Sal DeCicio made the point of, you know, some of that stuff is eating up the money that's raised by the sales tax. But his numbers didn't seem to add up in that he wasn't willing to say, he said, well, we shouldn't have done all those raises, but then he's not saying we can take them back. And if we're going to eliminate that tax immediately, then you have to cover the cost of that immediately. And I didn't see those numbers add up there.
And $3.7 million to fund union activity.
Well, I know what that is, and I know what their point is. First of all,
because that fires a lot of people up. I hear that. I'm like, unions, no.
Let's first of all realize that's small potatoes because we're talking $137 million in tax. That's 3% of it.
So that's not going to be. $3.7 million isn't a small number.
I'll tell you what that is. That's in the contract, and I don't think most people like that idea, but it's in the what it is money that's in the police union contract that says some of their officers can get release time to do union activity. And it's part of the contract. The position of the union is it's a negotiated item. I think most people look at that and say, you know, we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't pay for that. But I think it's the big thing on that, that we shouldn't lose sight of it. When we're talking about whether or not to eliminate the food tax.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. It's small potatoes. Now, whether or not we should do it, that's another matter, but it's not a number that gets you to $137 million even close.
Side of our friends up there on Camelback Mountain, there's no one of our listeners that would say $3.7 million is small potatoes.
Well,
it's $3.7 million going to something that we see as picketing and protesting
in a multi-billion dollar budget.
Doesn't matter.
More than I make in a week. That's true.
Okay.
But so you look at the individual level, it's big dollars. But when you're at the level of government, a multi-billion dollar budget, it's small change. I'm not defending it. I don't think anybody can.
Okay, good.
I'm just saying it's peanuts.
Yeah. Okay. But still, when you hear someone say peanuts, it's almost being discounted. Because we go to a federal level where we're not going to cut that program. That's only $20 million. Our budget is this. You need to start with $20 billion. You need those $20 million to get rid of it all.
I guess my point in general would be if we have to make up big shortfalls, we got to look at big items. In fact, it's a mistake to look at the tiny stuff first. If we got to make big cuts, we got to look at big numbers and decide, you know, what on that we can't live. And here's the hard part on that. Police and fire, those words are sacrosanct. And they said, well, every politician said, we don't want to cut that. We want to put more into that. The problem is those are the big items. There are never enough small items that you can possibly cut. And what you always get to, and we got this on both sides in this debate, is, well, we'll just do efficiencies. That's sort of like being against waste, fraud, and abuse. We're all against waste, fraud, and abuse. We're all for efficiencies. But if we have big dollars, we have to be talking. If you're going to cut big dollars, you have to be talking personnel.
We're all for getting rid of waste, fraud, and abuse, but it's all relative. Our definitions of waste, fraud, and abuse.
Sure.
It's always waste when it's someone else's spending it. It's always fraud when someone else is doing it, and it's never.
And in the waste area, if you're talking an entity like city government, most of that money goes to salaries. So if you're talking about eliminate waste, remember, you're talking about, if you want to get to big dollars, you're talking about cutting down your workforce.
97% don't have the tools to do their job. That was Carlene Keough Parks speaking about our police department, our fire department.
That was a survey, and that is my area.
This is your area of expertise. So let me ask you this.
I really can't speak to it because I'd like to see what the question was.
She followed it up with two stories about the efficiencies of police and fire. She wasn't advertising we need more police officers or we need more money for police officers. She was saying, I had a break-in, it was there in 3 minutes. I had a fire, and it was there in 2 minutes.
Which I think
we're working at maximum operating efficiency here.
That point could be taken. Police and fire is doing pretty well, and it's probably adequately funded. That was my takeaway of that point.
Sure,
in a way, it kind of worked against her argument.
I was shocked, but
tell you one of I've done a lot of citizen surveys for
this is your wheelhouse.
When you ask people to rate various departments, you know what's always at the top? Number one is fire, and number two is police. And the only reason I think fire is above police is that when you have an encounter with a policeman, there is some possibility for a small number
all
of people.
All police officers aren't saints. I'm sorry.
That's why police is a little lower. Some of your encounters with the police can be contention when you get pulled over or something like that. But when you have an encounter with a fireman, he's there to help you 100% of the
right.
time.
Right, yeah.
So fire, but they're both astronomically high, and they both outrank everything else. So politically, everybody wants to dance very, very carefully around police and fire.
And it is political. That's a political football. It's a hot potato for them. They love this thing. This is what they can go after each other for. Now, do you think the police, speaking of unions, do you think the public would feel the same way about police and fire as far as our spending on police and fire if we had a line item budget that we got to read through top to bottom on how much the salaries are, the spending, and the pensions?
I think we have a kind of a love-hate relationship with the police. Mostly it's the love side. Then you hear some incident of a cop out of control and people get upset about that. Or the pension spiking doesn't
sit with regards to money.
That doesn't
right.
sit real well. The problem, I think, with these things is for example, you want to pay people appropriately, generously even. But I don't think most people have any idea.
I think appropriately over generously when we talk about tax dollars.
Somewhere in that range.
Okay.
Appropriate to generous.
Okay.
But nobody has any idea what these folks are paid. And so most of this discussion occurs in a vacuum. And proponents of higher police pay will cite the heroic nature of a lot of police work. And a lot of it is. Opponents, and Sal maybe more on the pay issue, he's more of a hawk, will cite things like pension spiking,
right.
which people look at that. And even the word, once you say the word pension spiking, well, we're against that because that sounds like you're gaming the system, which clearly it is.
Detroit was brought up, and I think it was brought up appropriately. A lot of people look at Detroit and think that was that was a union bust of a town.
Well,
we heading there?
Well, I think in fairness, it was a whole lot of things. The automobile industry in the 50s and this 60s in this country could do no world. That was That was the richest city in the country.
Sure it was.
And the automobile industry tanked. And
Union?
Then Detroit found out that they were a one industry town. Yeah.
And they got a lot of money too from us a few years ago.
Yeah.
An
auto worker in Detroit with benefits was making up to $75 an hour, but the company was making so much money nobody cared.
Are we heading there? Is Phoenix? Do we have that much? Do we have unfunded pension liabilities that are a danger to our future?
I went to the city website, and if you read what they say now, their pensions are funded.
Okay.
I think the problem is when you have defined benefit plans, it gets into some unbelievably tricky math. And I think my real answer is the assertion is there, but I don't know. It's almost impossible to really know.
We want to thank the candidates for Phoenix City Council District 6, Sal DeCiccio and Carlene Keo Parks, for stopping by. We wish both of them the best of luck in their campaign, and we thank them for wanting to do good for our city. Alongside Dr. Mike O'Neill, I'm Mike Russell. Thanks for spending some time with us. You've been listening to Think Tank on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.